Welcome back, everyone, to FinTech Mavericks. I'm your host, Nicole Casperson.
And I'm Drew Glover.
Drew, I've been thinking, every week on the show, I keep hearing a similar theme. Our Mavericks are leveraging content to help drive growth for their personal brands as well as their business.
But let's be real. Most founders don't have the time or bandwidth to execute on that. They're too buried in the grind of running the business.
But that's where the right partner can make all the difference.
Ah, so why don't we hand them the same platform that powers our back office?
All right, listeners, we've partnered up with our friends at Brex to bring you something very special, because you too deserve to spend smarter and move faster.
Here's the deal. Open a Brex account to enjoy $750 in Brex travel credits or $450 cash back just for signing up.
And if you're a remote company, the perks get even better. 100,000 bonus points when you deposit $250K into your Brex business account. Then another 25,000 points when you spend $10K on your Brex card.
And on top of the points, you're getting some serious add-ons. 5K in AWS credits, 2,500 in OpenAI credits, plus access to Brex Capital Solutions. Not to mention personalized white glove onboarding to help you hit the ground running.
Wow. Want to learn more? Head to brex.com/fintechmavericks and catapult your business with Brex.
Because if you take the grind out of running your business,
you can focus on telling your story.
Spin smarter.
Move faster.
With Brex.
With Brex. Welcome to a live podcast recording of FinTech Mavericks. I'm your host, Nicole Casperson.
I'm Drew Glover.
Today, we're thrilled to be joined by Peter Walker, head of insights at Carta. Now, Peter's work sits at the center of the startup economy, shaping narratives and unlocking stories from Carta's data, which covers over 45,000 U.S. startups.
Wow. You didn't drop the mic, but you should have. Yeah, nailed it.
Peter, welcome to FinTech Mavericks.
Nicole, thank you so much for having me. And Drew, for a wonderful event. Thanks, man. This has been an awesome tie.
Yes. For listeners out there, we are together in person in San Francisco at the FinTech Summit, not to be mistaken for any other FinTech Summit. This is the
V.
That's true. A lot of people use FinTech and Summit in the same sentence. Not the real ones.
No,
this is the only real.
They all messed up. Because of that, I got the URL.
Nailed it.
You put the before, URL is live.
Not fintechsummit.ai.
No.
That too.
That's the true SF one.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, before we started though, we were talking a bit about, you were talking about attention, Peter, and how...
I need it, yes, go on.
Well, and also just how, so during the summit, that was captured, right? Like that Drew and team were able to kind of keep the attention of an audience, which is like very, are you making fun of my mic?
I'm definitely not, but I just noticed it and I was like, is she a professional and I don't know how to hold a microphone?
That's a good hack though, that's good. It works well.
Honestly, it just makes me not have to pay attention. I'm like.
I sort of like it though.
Yeah.
No, go on.
Do I look that funny doing it?
Wow, okay, shots at me.
Anyways, okay, this will be a podcast eventually.
Yeah, this will be good.
The attention that you're able to capture, what was it about? Well, give us the essence for the listeners that weren't here. Like, what was it about the summit that...
So I think you did two things really well. And for anyone in startups that goes to a lot of events, which is pretty much everyone, it feels like, you know, you're kind of always rotating through events hosted by VCs, hosted by LPs, hosted by startups, whatever. I think there's two things. One is just the quality of the panelists was very high outside of myself.
Facts.
And secondly, and I think more importantly, you understood like energy. Like you do panels and then speed networking and breaks. And there has to, if you do too many of these things in a row, it's just like they kind of blend into each other. And it's very difficult for the person to like maintain some sort of separation between the things that they heard. So I thought that was really good.
No, thank you. And I really appreciate that, Peter.
Totally.
Thank you. You know, maybe 6 or 7 months ago, we decided to do this. And it was mainly because we were off the back of, you know, all these conferences shall remain nameless, but they were one of the 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 person conferences where if you buy a booth, you're just waiting on random foot traffic.
Yep.
Totally. If you are there, you are hoping you run into someone that you know. And, you know, we just wanted to build an environment where everything was purposeful, and no matter what, if you stumbled into a conversation or you scheduled it, it was one that value would be taken from it. And so obviously the location's great, the Golden Gate Club here in the Presidio in San Francisco, but we had folks like yourselves there where we knew that every conversation was going to be something we walk away with feeling really happy about and with some actionable moves afterwards.
I think he nailed it. I agree. Every conversation I had has been great. And
I hope the podcast listeners are feeling FOMO for not being there.
I know.
I think next year.
I think next year, 20,000 people.
Just like we said, we didn't want.
Soon Dreamforce and then the world. Yeah.
All right. So, Peter, you've built a really unique voice in fintech. I'm pivoting to you.
Yeah.
By turning data into clear, compelling, interesting narratives.
Sure.
What drew you to this work?
I mean, I actually don't consider myself in fintech. I consider myself in startups. And that is like, that has been the driving force of my, so I started a company in college, and then I have been working at, I was employee number 8 or 9 at a startup back east. And so I got the bug and I absolutely loved it. And then Carta is this place that is no longer a startup. I don't think we count anymore. We're 1,500 people, et cetera, et cetera. But we live and breathe startup founders and VCs. Like, all we think about is this ecosystem. So the fact that I get to do this thing married to a data set that is all about startups and VCs, like, I'm a kid in the candy store every day. And that is, that interest is tough to replicate. You know? So, like, I think I would be pretty bad at my job if I didn't absolutely love startups. And that's been the best part about it. Yeah.
I'm so curious, you joining Carta and you having the role that you have, really overseeing data and insights, analytics, all of it. I can't imagine that was like a role sitting on LinkedIn job board somewhere. Was that something you created? Like, what was the journey for that to become a role?
100%. There was no job rec available for that one. It was something that I pitched the CMO at Carta, actually. So take a step back. 2020 hits. I'm working at a startup, and then COVID. And I get on Twitter for the first time. Not advisable, generally speaking, but worked out for me. And what I did was I was a data viz nerd for the last 10 years. So I was taking data sets that I found and visualizing them on Twitter and saying, here's what's going on in the pandemic. And people started liking them, and like that started taking off on its own. And then the Atlantic magazine reached out and said, hey, we're building a COVID tracking project to do this kind of work. Do you want to come run a data viz team there? And I was like, of course, that sounds amazing. So it was this group of 200 people in a Slack, never met each other in real life, and unpaid, whatever. And the only goal was provide great data to the world about COVID. Because if you remember at that time, the CDC was like, maybe had a PDF every 4 weeks. Like, it was very difficult to know what was going on. And so that was this introduction into the idea that if you have a data set that is this dense and useful and difficult to understand without explanation, there's basically an infinite amount of content that you can bring out of it.
Basically.
So I did that for a year, and then the project shut down, which I was very grateful for, because a lot of the NGOs that started COVID didn't shut down. But the whole point of this was, as soon as the CDC gets good enough, we're going to shut down. And we did it. And I was like, that's amazing. I love that orientation. And then I made a list of the companies. I was already thinking about brand and data in this way, and Carta was number one on that list. It was like, who can I do this thing for in the corporate world? And so I pitched this role to the old CMO at Carta, Jane Alexander, and I said, Jane, give me a trial here. You have a data set that I think is amazing, and I know how to talk about it. It was 2021, so everything was up and to the right. And she was like, sure, whatever, come on. I don't know if I would get hired at Carta today. But it was an amazing experience. And then I get into Carta, and it was even more fascinating than I thought. I mean, the data set that we have is unbelievable.
Of course.
So this motion of insights, wasn't something that existed, but I do think it's starting to exist at more companies. I'd be shocked if more companies don't start doing this over the next couple of years.
How did you get in touch with the CMO?
One of the people at COVID tracking project at The Atlantic was an engineer. She was volunteering. Her name's Erin Bomer. She was volunteering on the data science side, and she worked at Carta. And she was like, you have to meet our CMO. I think you guys would just hit it off. So we went to Burba in San Francisco and had a wine night, and was like, I was like, I love everything about your business. Please hire me. And she was like, I don't know, this is weird. And then I kept making that pitch, and she finally relented. But it was total serendipity.
You know? Love that.
Yeah.
Love that. Really cool. You went and got it.
Yeah.
Went and got
it. I think we should advocate more for like building your own role at these places.
Yes, 100%. And I think that when I give advice to people joining startups, not that Carta was really a startup at that point, but any job, is like, you need to have a reason why you care about this company.
Yes.
Not this role, not this idea, this company. And for me, it was very obvious. It was, Carta has the data set that I can make work. This role doesn't work at that many companies, but at Carta, I know it will. So if you will let me in here, this is the only place that I can do the thing that I want to do. So it was very, it was like, this isn't, I'm not pitching myself to every company. This is the company. That makes
right,
sense.
Right. Yeah. I will say as a journalist, like, and I go to media events where companies are always asking, like, what do I got to do to get your attention or to get you to cover or whatever it is? And proprietary data is a huge element. If someone sends me a like solid piece of proprietary data that I can then exactly interpret a narrative for my audience specifically and pull the greatest pieces that work, that is huge. I like want to be able to report that data. And then if it's coming directly from a fintech company that is so ingrained in the industry, even better. So like that I fundamentally understand. I think more companies should be doing that in a way that's modern and digestible, right? They have you running a newsletter. They have like you're posting on LinkedIn all the time, right? Yeah. You've got like over 100,000 followers on there paying attention to that.
130, who's counting?
I mean, we only get balloons. Do you have your like 130,000 balloons?
I do, The YouTube plaque that says 131. LinkedIn does not send those. Yeah,
LinkedIn, we want plaques.
I don't want plaques.
Never mind. We don't scratch that. But that, the to the point of like, I guess it would be, we need to see that B2B kind of fintech media evolve a bit.
100%.
Into that.
I love the idea of insights for PR, a PR motion for insights. I'll actually talk really quickly about a friend of mine, Jason Saltzman, who, this guy didn't know me at all.
Relief?
Reached out on LinkedIn. What's that?
Relief?
No.
Okay.
Not Relief. He worked at this company called Live Data Technologies. He's now the head of CB Insights. He's the head of insights at CB Insights. Which is an amazing place. Somebody you should know, actually. Really, really good dude. And he called me and he was like, Peter, I'm building an insights team. I like what you've done at Carta. Talk to me about it. And we mentioned PR as just this one little thing. And then he grabbed onto that thread and became this incredible data source to every reporter that talks about startups or venture in a way that's so aligned where somebody from the Wall Street Journal puts out a brilliant piece on startup hiring or the way that layoffs are moving across the economy. And you follow up and you say, loved your piece. The next time would love to contribute some data that has X, Y, and Z. This is like how we could have fit in there. And boom, you're a source. And then you're not pitching the startup. You're pitching the information, right? You are actually increasing their knowledge and teaching them things about the industry. It's an amazing way to make friends with the reporters that actually matter.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. Well, and then to build your own credibility in the industry as well.
100%.
And I think that's something that... Once again, we can see more of during my panel earlier, right? Rick from super.com, like he did a great job kind of closing us out with that nugget of I'm finally starting to create and present myself in a way that is building community around the business community, right?
Yeah.
Me as Rick, a human, has to go do that. And that's, we're in that inflection point where it is exciting to see more leaders in fintech wanting to do that and kind of actually see just a wider breadth of leaders in our space.
And I think
doing
kind of being forced to.
Right.
You know, like, we all spoke so much today about the differences with the AI building of companies, and like one of the biggest things is distribution. And so how are you going to hack distribution? One of the best ways is to have something novel to say, you know? And to be honest, if there's something useful that we've done at Carta that I wasn't expecting, it was, have a person behind it. Like, you cannot
that
do this from
is,
a brand, you know?
Right.
You cannot do this from a brand.
And I'm just the biggest believer, and I say it to a lot of our clients on the fiat growth side, where I say, I don't care if you have zero users or 200,000, you are an influencer, like it or not.
Yes.
And you're either going to own it. Oh, I mean, they actually all agree. Like, vehemently agree.
With varying levels vehemently of reticence, agree. I would imagine.
But there's just a fear. I mean, we've all been there before. We all started with nothing and no voice. And we all remember the days where it took us 2 hours to put a post up, right?
Yeah.
Or you thought 2 days before actually posting it after you wrote it. So
I actually bought a lot of bots from Manila. So I started pretty high. Like, most of my stuff was fake until it got real. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, honestly, dude, like that's the way to get over the hill.
No doubt.
I'm going to pitch that to a couple.
That costs money, but
let me get you 200,000 so like
ego. Yeah.
You know, you already have some supporters.
Totally. Yeah, why is the Philippines so interested in this data? I don't know what's going on. Yeah.
No, but a big, huge believer, like content is king right now from the standpoint of really, for direct to consumer, it's a little bit different, but specifically for B2B, which yes. we're in the middle of the golden age of, like it's not account-based marketing anymore. I do think events are really important,
yes.
but like you definitely need to be having a voice and they're buying you. They're not buying the boring product. And social media was built for individuals. It was not built for businesses. Yes. We're all forced to create business profiles.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't be spending hundreds of thousands of dollars a month on those keywords. We should be boosting up what the CEO said yesterday that was novel
yes.
and counterculture, 100%. What the rest of the market say.
You have to, and I think that this is in particular incumbent upon the CEO to be a voice yes. in yes. the industry, whatever that means.
Yes.
It doesn't mean you need to be a LinkedIn influencer with hundreds of thousands of followers, but it needs to be that you have clear ideas about the space you're working in and you make those ideas public in whatever way you choose. Like, it is an absolute must because people are not necessary, especially in a world where feature parity is easier to get to than ever. Like, people are buying from people that they respect how they think, not just what they build.
That's right. And yeah. one of the biggest downfalls, I think a lot of folks, they'll look at Peter Walker and say, oh, well, I don't have 130,000 followers.
Sure.
Where my response is we're actually, what we are building towards is niche audiences. You have a product, you have a niche product. We're trying to get go-to-market fit. You don't need 130,000 followers or 130,000 users. You need 25 killer enterprise clients. You can do that with 5,000 followers yes. as long as all 5,000 are people that care about your product.
And it's not as though we started this at Carta with that much of a personal brand. I probably walked into Carta with like 2,000 connections, right? Mm-hmm. I hadn't even flipped the creative thing on mm-hmm. LinkedIn yet. And then the annoying part, the part that really is the like valley of death, is you start making stuff. No one likes it. No one cares. No one reads it. This happened to me. Except for your friends on the group chats that will send it to you and like completely ridicule about it.
Dude.
Like,
and the manila
box.
Are
you trying to be big on LinkedIn? You have like nobody cares, dude. And then you have to tell your group chat that like.
We've all been there.
Shut up. Yeah,
like, and you're like, bro, just like my post.
Just like, friggin' support me, man.
Just put a damn emoji up there.
And to be clear, I would do exactly the same thing and have to them one other thing. So like, I respect it. But, and then you get to have the, you get to get them back later on and be like, hey, I don't know if you know, but I'm not going to introduce you to that LP.
Yeah, yeah, you should have been doing that 2 years ago.
All right. Well,
oh, you want me to post about your fund? Oh, so interesting.
Well, I mean, the power now, right? Like these days now, the I'll get a LinkedIn DM that's like, it would just mean so much if you
just mentioned
liked
the
this
brand.
One. Just, yeah, or just mentioned yeah. this.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
just
oh.
like it and then unlike it. That would feel good too. Yeah. That doesn't work.
I know. And I'm like, oh, that costs money now.
That's Nicole, how much money does that
that's
cost?
That's so sweet. Ha, ha, ha.
Let's talk about the brand. Yeah.
Wait, this is your, I'm interviewing you, sir.
I think we should flip the table.
Anyways, so basically, how does a singular LinkedIn, I don't do one-offs.
Yeah, I understand. So I was on a LinkedIn panel recently with Corporate Bro.
Oh, yeah.
And Corporate Natalie.
Oh, nice.
Those two. Yeah.
Great squad.
Amazing people.
Great squad.
And they, Corporate Bro is like, yeah, we do a lot of stuff. And Corporate Natalie is a machine.
Yes.
She has like a team and the system of content creation is unbelievable. And the system of brand partnerships is even more crazy. And she is just like absolutely going for itself. And I respect it so much. And she doesn't do one-offs either. It's like right. huge brand partnerships, which on LinkedIn.
I mean, like, she was in a Super Bowl commercial.
Dude, wild. She was like, I think she was speaking at like the Salesforce sales yeah. kickoff, which yeah. is like. The sales kickoff, right? That's there. It doesn't get any bigger than that. It's unbelievable what you can do with a brand like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I just did a brand campaign with Salesforce, since you've mentioned it.
Sorry, it just got dusty in here.
And yeah. and it was cool to see how many resources they can put to something like that.
We almost like got there. We were very right, close like, to a number. How many resources? Like if you were to
how many
if you were
zeros
to discuss those resources in terms of American dollars. How many resources do you think?
But okay, I do kind of I guess I will
transition. Okay, fair back.
I want to talk about how the sausage is made, right? Like, so we're talking about, and it, honestly, I'm realizing in our last few interviews, almost all of our interviews for FinTech Mavericks, this is such a recurring theme of we interview someone who is so aligned with Drew and I in terms of content, community is a true revenue driver. It is like this hill that we will die on. Every company needs to be thinking about social and media and insights and newsletters and podcasting. I mean, I guess from you mentioned systems and like someone like Corporate Natalie having such amazing systems to make that content work. Because I think what we're seeing and what people kind of talk to me about is they don't really even know where to start. They just know they want to do it. And then it's like hitting the ignition is the hard part.
And just before you answer that, I do think it's important to note, right? Carta has proprietary data that you're able to use in a really creative way. Corporate Natalie is legit funny. Like, I like laugh at all
she's
her
shit. She's
actually
funny.
And so like Sif systems, yes. But just on top of that, would love for you to answer that question from the standpoint of like, on top of the system, what is required?
Sure.
Yes.
Yes. You have to be incredibly talented and good looking.
And
that's
funny.
That's like the first, pretty clear. This is why I think the insights motion at these B2B companies makes a ton of sense, because it gets you over the first hurdle, which is, is this all going to come from my personality, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I have to be funny. I have to be creative. I have to be plugged into the conversation all the time. I'm a CEO. I don't want to do that. I've got a billion other things to do. Or am I going to delegate that, and then I have to have this person be, like, very aligned to the brand, and I have to trust that person very deeply, which is another question, which is a big deal. The beauty of insights, if you have a proprietary data set, is that you are not talking about your product and you're not talking about yourself. You're talking about the industry.
Yeah.
You're talking about the world in which your people swim. And that is magnificent when it comes to content creation, because whether or not you care about each individual post I make, you can be like, Peter knows a lot about startups, you know? And that's useful for Carta, because when I have a question about startups, I'm gonna think of Peter. And I'm going to ask him that question. And guess what? That question from Drew is the next piece of content that I'm going to write, because I can go and be like, oh, that's right. Are safes actually big in the Midwest? Let me check. I should know that. It is an incredible flywheel of content on the one end, questions from the audience on the other, input to the next piece of content. And then the amazing thing about insights, and the thing that I think most people don't understand, is my work, if no one ever saw it on LinkedIn, would still be valuable to Carta, because everything I'm teaching other cartons.
Yes.
So like into the interior work of insights, I talk to our sales teams, our customer success teams, our BD teams. I build internal decks for everyone. Like anytime Carta is showing up in the ecosystem, most of the time they're using some insights data. And it just is this, we don't have to tell people, trust us. We show them. We know who you are. We know what you care about. Series A valuations, where we're talking to Series A founders, right? Oh, you're an accelerator? Let me walk you through what that safe deal actually looks like for your dilution. It's just this insta credibility that comes from knowing a lot about the data that you have. Mm-hmm. And I think especially in fintech, the data sets are mostly rich enough that they would support this kind of motion. So like Ramp just hired an economist. His name's Aura. He's amazing. He's basically doing my job, but at Ramp. And he's already crushing a ton of stuff. And it's like, they should have had that team 5 years ago, right? But like, there are so many fintechs, I think, that could benefit from this team as an evangelist for my own job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because they hire an economist, but at the end of the day, this economist is really a content person. They're a social person.
I mean,
they're a marketing person.
Like making man on the street videos talking about like the tariffs and stuff. He's like, you know, a man about town economist, which is what you want.
Right.
Yes. And that person needs to be content oriented, which is the other thing. PDFs and white papers don't cut it.
Yep.
No.
Nobody cares.
Not anymore.
And when you first started Carta, were you modeling this system off of someone else's business, or is this an unlock of your own?
I think there were sort of OGs in the insight space. I'm thinking of Gong, Zuora did a couple of things like that. But I think the real unlock for us at Carta, the thing that we did differently, is we moved from every quarter we're going to put out a report to every day Peter's going to talk about something on LinkedIn. And that, one, that amount of content is very different. Two, that consistency is very different. And then three, back to the systems question, it requires that, like, putting together a big research paper is a lot of time and effort for a bunch of people on your team. Content writers, data scientists, all these people. Can you consolidate that into one person or a couple people and have the content be always on? If you can make that switch, like, you can be in all these conversations.
Right. Well, the thing is that you do something like that massive piece of proprietary data, and then it basically is a, and we at FinTech as Fun will call it a large piece of content furniture that you then get to just collect like that sawdust after and then build new pieces of furniture, right? Yes. What you're reposting on LinkedIn. Yes. You're not making, I think there's a lot of misconceptions around how much work. It's a lot of work, don't get me wrong, being a content human. But the way, and people look at me like...
Content first, human second.
Sorry, human of content. Anyways, whatever. Speaking of, my newsletter just went out, which is amazing because I'm doing this.
Oh my God, congrats.
Thank you. What's the URL? Well, I'm getting my newsletter like 500 times. Anyways, but like there's the systems, but there's like ways to do it to where you're creating one large piece of furniture and living off this evergreen piece of content for like months and months. I hosted a leadership summit in April. I am still writing about that.
Yes.
Because all of that, that's my proprietary data.
No doubt.
All of that information, all of that said on my stage, all of that, that's exclusive content interviews that no one else has. Yeah. Even this podcast, right? Like, essentially. Right? We're all going to say stuff that
not
no one
exactly
else...
mine.
Yeah, I don't know. Drew seems like he might own the podcast.
Oh. Anyways. Do we need a prenup?
I know we're good. We're
Let's
good.
Talk prenup. About it.
Let's bring Drew to the moon.
Do we need a prenup?
Is anyone building that? Any startup?
I know. Do we need a prenup for our content?
That sounds great. Yeah.
Our
it's content. A 50-50 state. We're in California.
Yeah, of
you know?
Course. Yeah, so, of course. Yeah, done. Yeah, done. Good. I'm down for...
Sorry about your marriage, though, bro.
Anyways. But yeah, so it's there's a way to do it without it being this great, big, like, thing, what monster. It,
you're pointing at this, like, cultural thing that exists in many companies, which is the, like, apprehension around the time and investment annoyance this is going to take and the legal review.
Yeah.
Hell, I mean, a lot of this is regulated data, et cetera. You know, Carta, we would never put out anything on individual companies. So it's aggregated and anonymized. Who decides what's aggregated enough or anonymized enough? Like, all that stuff matters, right? But effectively, when you have... So we produce a lot of quarterly reports. I love the people who download our quarterly reports, or at least one a day. They're amazing. But the value of those is not necessarily how many times they get downloaded. It is how much fresh content they put into our ecosystem, because I can feed off of a quarterly report for 2 months on LinkedIn and talk about different stories and present them in different ways and talk about change over time, and all of that matters. And it just, I just think that if you are not willing to consistently put out new content in a much faster pace than you used to, it's very easy to just get forgotten. You know, the mind, the attention span of a lot of people in your industry is very small, and you just have to always show up when something new and interesting to say.
But do you ever struggle with being so focused on LinkedIn? Because I mean, obviously, you have a system. There is a very specific recipe
which
that is working incredibly well.
Sure.
But I'm sure there's things that you see in the news, different things where you're probably a little bit enticed, a little bit of a moth to a flame of like, oh, like, I want to share this, but it's against the system.
Could be good.
Yeah.
Yes and no. I mean, we're on X. I do a podcast. We're on YouTube, a clip from that podcast. There's a push to get me internally onto TikTok. I'm trying to resist that. I think I would be horrible on TikTok, but maybe... like sticker cutouts where they're like, here's the problem is people, some VCs are doing really quite well on TikTok, and a lot of times they'll use graphics that we create. They'll be like, hey, Carter just said this, and then the people will be like, we should do that. I don't want to be on TikTok, so please save me.
Fair.
Yeah. But in general, yes, like your channel of choice, I do think that it is important if you're starting this to have a very clear stack ranking of what channels matter to you.
Yeah.
And like, spend the vast majority of your time on your most important channel, which in by and large, if you're doing B2B, is LinkedIn, almost always. Like X, yeah, it's cool to go viral on X, but you're not getting a lot of leads.
Yeah.
You know? So like LinkedIn is where you're gonna be. So then learn about LinkedIn, like make it a study. You know, you're not building content in a vacuum, you're building content in a gigantic conversation with 1,000 other pieces of content that somebody's scrolling through in the feed. You need to be aware of what's going on there, yeah.
What is your recipe? Then, like, how if someone we've talked a lot about like this importance, if someone wanted to get started, because clearly we're very big advocates for proprietary data,
sure,
and But so let's say.
Why do you laugh when you say that? I feel like you're not.
I don't know. Because I'm like.
So obvious.
Yeah, it's so, I mean, like, so incredibly obvious. Yeah.
Give us the recipe. Because you've gotten to a point where you're not waking up every day like, oh my God, what am I going to post?
No.
Right? You know exactly.
Most of the time.
Yeah. I know it's fluid because I'm the same way.
Totally.
I've never found myself to ever be the advice I've gotten is like, oh, just on Sunday or Monday batch 5 LinkedIn posts.
I can't do that.
And schedule them out at 11 a.m. and forget about it. And I'm like, oh, that sounds awful.
No, I can't do that.
Why would I ever do that?
Most of the time, because I imagine like what I'm going to say on Sunday night and then put it out on Friday, I'm going to feel like, what did
completely
I write?
Completely different about
happened?
It. Yeah, right.
Like, I'm not going to do it. And commenting and like being engaged in your own content does matter a lot. Like you have to respond and know what you're talking about and all that stuff.
Yes.
Okay. The system. So every single, most of the time, not every single time, but the vast majority of the time on LinkedIn, the content is a square graphic. And that graphic is made up of two parts, a chart and then stuff around the chart. Mm-hmm. And that stuff around the chart is the header, the arrows, the like whatever you want. I do that other stuff in Figma. That's the design tool. The core data is in Tableau. And so I would love if those two were linked.
Had a baby.
But they're not.
Yeah.
Canva and Flourish. Canva bought Flourish, which is another database program. So those are natively linked now. So if I was starting today, I might choose Canva and Flourish because it's an amazing little combined set. And it's very simple. You have a graphic. You put some titling around it. You write the post. I had a meeting the first year and a half that I was at Carta on my calendar from 8 to 8:40 every morning that said, create something. Aww. I wasn't creating something for that day. I was creating something in general, so I knew how to get better and faster at this thing. So if there's two metrics to track, you're going to obviously track impressions and followers and all that kind of stuff because it's impossible as a human not to. The thing you should be tracking that most people don't is cycle time. How long does it take me to create one good-looking piece of content? Mm. Your cycle time should be going down. If it's not going down, then you're not creating a system. But once it is going down, then you can get to the point where instead of 40 minutes, it takes me 10 or 15. Mm-hmm. And so now every morning it's like, okay, I already have some ideas. I'll read like what's in the news a little bit.
Right.
What are conversations I've had recently with founders that seem to be top of mind? What else can I plug into? And then you go. And then the Carta content calendar often gets embedded in that as well. So if we have a big product launch, maybe I'll do content around that product for a little while.
Right.
It's really about that cycle time on one thing. And the number one piece of advice is your stuff is going to suck for a while. Just put it out. The fact that nobody read it is great because it sucked. So no one read the thing that sucked. And they'll only read the good stuff that you get in a year.
Yes, you need
the
rep.
You can't get to the good stuff until you put out the stuff that sucks.
You need
the
rep.
That happened to me for a long. I look back in horror at how bad some of the earlier stuff was. It's okay. It's okay. They didn't. Nobody read it. Nobody important read it. Just keep telling yourself that.
Right.
Truth.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, we all started there. Now we were talking about this earlier, but I remember the days where it would take me an hour and a half to write something and take me another 2 days to get the courage to post it, and then no one would read it. And to your
point. What were those tears like? Were they like pretty?
No, that feeling.
They were pretty tough days. Yeah.
I know exactly what that feeling in your stomach's like too.
The worst.
And you're just like, oh.
Happens still now though, where I'll put something out and I'll be like, I thought that was great. And nobody seemed to care. And that's painful. A little annoying. And then guess what? The beauty of LinkedIn is you get another shot tomorrow. And you don't have to do the X thing where you're posting 100 times a day. You just get one shot.
Yeah,
and it's really lovely. You give me one chance to make something good, and if it doesn't work, no worries. Do it again. You know.
You talk about your system, and I have a system as well. But what I struggle with is I find LinkedIn is like this therapeutic release for myself.
Me too.
So I am always trying to fold my business into what I do, but there's always like this like personal overtone to everything that I do that I feel like I have to do for my own sanity. Because I really, really would love to have more of a, for lack of a better term, like militant system that I can work towards.
Sure.
But I'll do it for 2 days and I'll be like, no, I felt weird this morning. Folks got to know about that.
Well, one, folks do got to know about that. That is the 100. That's just a fact. And we read you religiously. So that's great. And two, then like, cool, like mix it in, you know, like whatever. It is whatever you want your brand to be.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not the case that you can't pivot. I
I get that, or a lot of people give the advice up front that they say you should be narrowly targeting all of your content on this, like, you should have an ICP, right? And that ICP should be incredibly well-defined, mm-hmm. and it's Julia in HR, and she's 45, yes. and she shops here and whatever. I kind of disagree with that. It's like, one, by dint of who you are, you're naturally going to make content for a certain kind of person most of the time. And two, you know what's useful for Carta is to have non-founders read my stuff too. Because mm-hmm. guess who founders talk to? Non-founders,
right.
like investors, and their HR folks, and their CFOs, and their employees. Like, mm-hmm. it's cool. It's fine if all of those things are not directly ROI generating.
Right.
And now I'm on a rant. Stop tracking. Sorry.
Tell them. To the camera.
Three, two, one. Oh, wait, we're live. Okay. Why, like, the people who think that you need to prove ROI from every individual post are not going to make it. Just, that's not how this works. You are building brand. You are not building a function where you get to put in a dollar and out comes $2. You get to put in a ton of time and effort, and then hopefully people like you at the end. Like, that's what you're doing, which is uncertain, but that is exactly what it is.
Snap. Yes. Yeah. But no, but you have to get your reps in. You shared an incredibly important part, which is thinking of the cycle of time. You're actually, Peter, you're making me realize how much more successful I am than I realized, because I've gone over the years from taking 8 hours. What?
That is amazing.
Thank
yes.
you.
Yes. What was the URL of your newsletter again? I didn't catch it earlier the first time. Okay, yeah.
.co. Anyways, no, not to be mistaken with .com. No, okay, I didn't finish. I say that because people ask me all the time how I chose 8:45 p.m. to send my newsletter on a Tuesday and Thursday night.
Yeah.
As if, like, I have some magical formula for why, and my engagement rate is so high, and I've kept it that way. The honest answer is that's literally how long it took me to write it.
Exactly.
When I first started, I would sit there wake up Tuesday morning, get to my computer, 9 a.m., and just, here it goes. But I had to do that practice over and over and over. And anytime anyone's been like, outsource it to a ghostwriter, I'm like, F that, no. Like, Jeez. No, I'm going to do it. And like, I wrote my newsletter that went out while we're sitting on this panel podcast.
You wrote your newsletter right now? You're writing it on your iPad right now?
As we're working.
It's incredibly.
This is the FinTickets from newsletter. No.
That is amazing.
With my eyes.
I wrote it in my mind.
It's AI. No, but I was going to tell, I really finished writing it in the plane ride over here.
Totally.
Right? Like, so I've gotten to that point where it's just less daunting. But it took years, right?
It takes a long
time. And
the
consistency and the practice and, yeah. So
wait, you hit on the thing that we should talk about. Please stop using ghostwriters and please stop writing this stuff with AI. At least, look, you should use, I shouldn't say that you shouldn't write it with AI, because oftentimes that can be great for ideas. Mm-hmm. And sometimes actually the writing is decent, if it's in your voice.
In your voice.
But stop commenting with AI, because it's not in your voice and people know, and then they ignore you because you're lame.
I have a confession.
Uh-oh.
I used a ghostwriter for 6 months. Mm. And this is early in my journey. But there's a couple really good things that came from it. One is I instantly found out that I'm better at generating my own ideas and writing my own ideas than someone else.
Who would have thought?
It took a couple $1,000s.
We love ourselves.
And it was a windy road to figure that out.
Yeah.
But it was good, because a lot of that fear I had once I got rid of that ghostwriter, right. I was like, dude, this is someone that like does this for a living. Like, right. What am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, let's go. Yeah, let's rock and roll.
I think you get to a point where you like experiment trying to do all the things everyone tells you you should do. And then you eventually circle around to then land on, oh, this is the thing I want to do, and now it's right. Like, and now the cycle feels right, and now the engagement's there, and now it's happening. And in our last podcast episode that we did with Kevin, he was saying how it's like the yellow Ferrari, right? Like, once you see one, you start to see so many of them, and that's kind of like a similar.
I guess we're driving on different streets.
In different cars.
Must have missed that. Yellow Ferraris that I must have missed here in the Presidio.
I don't know where Kevin lives.
Wait, Kevin
lives in a different neighborhood. Yeah.
The other confession I have to make is I typically use AI as my first draft.
Yep.
And the reason why is at first I tried to cheat the system and make it my final draft. And I realized it took me a lot longer to get to a final draft on AI than just get my first draft and then bring myself into it after the first draft.
Right.
I'm doing the same thing with charts. So I will build something and then I will take it to my little custom GPT within the Carta walled garden. And I'll say, like, make 20 versions of this. And the data will be wrong because it doesn't do it quite perfectly yet. But the ideas are great. And I'm like, oh, that should have been a scatter plot, not a bar chart. Like, I should go back and try something else. It's useful. I love it as a thought partner, not as like the thing that's actually creating most of the stuff.
Oh, yeah. AI, the thought partner.
That's nice. Yeah. If AI is listening, we love you so much.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for being such a good thought partner.
AI is always
Have you named yours? I named mine. Did you name your?
What? Hold on. Let's guess what you named this. Male or female name?
Female.
Okay, probably cutesy and cool.
Oh.
I'm just additive, it's not the name. I'm gonna go with Margot.
Oh my god, that's close. Ooh. I mean, it's not Margot. I have a friend
that would be a good name.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Her name was Penelope. Yeah.
My dog's name is Penelope.
Oh, cute.
Penelope Joy.
Oh, I love that.
Call her Penny. Yeah.
I do like to give pets and AI real human names.
Yeah. They appreciate it too. I was just talking to them. Yeah, and they loved it.
Do you have a name for yours?
I don't. No, I call it Libra Chat.
Hey, you really just left me hanging there.
Yeah,
didn't I did. You?
Yeah, that's called a no sell in the podcast industry.
No sell. All right. Do you have a name for yours?
I don't, but you know, I'll probably name mine Coco after my daughter.
What did you train it on?
After your daughter?
Yeah.
What did you train it on? Don't. We're gonna pass over that.
What I trained her? Yeah.
Did you train it on all of your prior LinkedIn posts? You're like, this context.
No. Yeah. So I took all my prior LinkedIn posts and then I took a number of other posts from other creators that I really admire.
Totally.
Post formats that I really liked.
Yeah.
Put that in there. And then, of course, I created my own personality. So I created Drewbot, which is just like me, who I am.
Nice.
And I actually send that to my team because sometimes they want to write content and they're like, Drew's going to, I'm like, just throw it in Drewbot and you can get my opinion. If I'm not around.
All right. The most important question, follow-up question to that is, was Peter and I in this cohort?
Yeah. Are we part of the training set?
Like, are we a part of your AI?
You know what? No offense. I probably have thrown a couple of Peters in there.
Oh, shit.
From a data perspective.
You see, this is why y'all needed a prenup.
But it's a data thing. It's a data thing.
It is a data thing.
Yeah, and like, I'm not a data person. So like, the most of the stuff I put in there for me was just like, it was my stuff.
Do you think that your team is asking Drewbot non-content questions? They're like, Drew.
Man, that would be a fun exercise.
You got to go back into
that
Drewbot.
That would be a fun exercise. But a lot of the content that from Fiat is, it's through my voice.
Yeah.
And so again, I'm always like, if you want a first draft without having to get me for an hour, just like throw it in there.
Totally.
And we can get to something.
Yeah.
All right. I'll just tell myself that maybe my post, it would just make maybe a little too sassy. Maybe
it would. You know, I'm going to throw a couple in there after this.
Yeah.
We're going to solve this.
I'm going to read Drew's post religiously, looking for that tiny bit of Nicole in there, you know?
I know. Yeah. All of a sudden, like, the AI is going to start being like, as a journalist. Yeah. And it's like, wait, when did Drew be? When I wrote my book.
As a journalist and a woman, you're like, Drew, I think something's wrong.
I know, So I understand that. I understand that there might not be some alignment. So I'm gonna let it slide, Drew.
That's good.
Let it slide, Drew.
That's good.
But anyway, you'll be hearing from my people. I have a few rapid fire questions for you.
Game.
Great. First thing you do every morning?
Check my phone. Not gonna lie.
Amazing.
To most people, we're like, I take an ice bath.
And oh, no. Most people say what you said, which I appreciate.
Yeah,
the honesty.
What do I do after I check my phone? I take Penny outside. And we have a nice little walk, and that's lovely.
Here's Penny is?
My corgi.
Oh.
Penelope Joy.
Oh, that's okay.
That's right.
And her nickname is Penny.
Back. That's a callback.
It's cute. Okay, favorite LinkedIn post you've ever written?
I don't know about favorite. The ones that are the most fun are the controversial ones, where I tell like VCs they're doing something really wrong, and they get real mad.
Ooh.
But the DMs are good.
Have you gotten mad at one of Peter's posts?
Never.
The DMs are good.
Never.
Yeah, yeah. There's one that I said, you should stop doing bridge rounds. They're almost always a waste of money.
They suck.
And then people like responded, and there was the same person who commented like, actually in our portfolio blank, and then DM'd me and was like, actually in my portfolio, not true. I was like, what are you doing, man? You don't need to do that. Like, it's weird.
Man, I haven't made people mad on LinkedIn. I don't think ever. I should try it.
It's not a great strategy for that platform, honestly, because people just are like, well, that guy kind of sucks. But it works occasionally if you do it in the right ways. Yeah.
I mean, if you're like
genuine about like just putting a spicy take about the.
I'm just like, look, this, I'm not saying that you're a bad person. I'm saying this is a dumb financial decision.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. All right. A founder trait you always bet on.
I think the best founder traits are the ones that are like the most obvious. So like scrappy relentlessness is great with a tiny, in this city, you got to say it, a tiny bit of tact. Like don't text my cell phone. Don't find my cell number and text me. This happened like a lot to be an advisor in your company. That's not good. But find me at events and figure out the things that I like and blah, blah, blah. That's good.
Yeah.
That nuance is important.
Build like real relationship.
Yeah.
Right. You got to like court first.
There's a thing in this city.
A like here and there. A comment.
There's a thing in this city so much where it's just like, oh, who are you? Pitch. Immediate pitch. And you're like, please stop. Oh my God. Please stop. Like.
Why is this happening
to
me?
I don't know your name. Yeah.
Why is this happening to me?
Again, it's like a deja vu. It's like always pitch. Yeah.
It's like I've been in situations where I've been like outside of a club with like fishnets and glitter on my face. Sure. And someone's like, oh my God, can you tell me about like fintech is fem and fintech? And I'm like, I really don't want to talk about fintech right now. Not with the glitter on my face.
There were people who came up to me at Burning Man last year and said, I read your LinkedIn. And I was like, this is weird. I don't like it.
Yeah. Like, there's honor in it, but also, like, aren't you supposed to be invisible in these spaces?
That's amazing you said there's honor in it. I mean, I couldn't agree more.
There is. Someone comes up to me and is like,
that's so
funny. I walked into this event and one of the volunteers was like, I went up to say my name to get my badge. And she was like, I follow you on LinkedIn. You know, and that's like such an exciting time.
It's a great moment.
It is. Yeah, it is. I love it. Okay. A book that has changed the way you lead or think.
Not a book, but the Netflix Culture Deck, the original Netflix Culture Deck, which was available for free on like one of the Slido platform, whatever. Really weird. Really made me think strongly about the difference between a team and a family, which I think is important.
That is a good one. All right, biggest data myth you love to bust.
This is maybe slightly controversial. If you are doing what I'm doing, which is building data-driven content for brand and marketing, statistical significance matters not at all. Throw it out the window.
Repeat that for us.
Okay. If you're building content to be noticed and to drive attention on social, statistical significance is not an important thing to worry about. The reason being is... you cannot lie in your data. That is obviously important. So what you do is, in every graphic, you say, where does this come from? And how many data points are in it? And you leave it up to the user to say whether or not that is enough or not enough.
Right.
It is completely silly. If you dig to the bottom of a ton of marketing studies, it's like, we emailed 200 people and 73 of them responded. Like, your data is probably better than that, right? So just be upfront about how much data it is and let people draw their own conclusions. Like,
yes.
People gooding in hazards about like, you know, R squared values on this kind of stuff. It doesn't matter. It's not what you're doing. Yeah.
Solid.
Sorry, data scientists. No. Yeah.
Solid. All right. Yeah. If your newsletter had a theme song, what would it be?
It would candidly be something like slightly more boring.
Okay.
It would probably be like Tequila Sunrise by the Eagles or something, like really mellow.
Aw, love.
And chill.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Yeah.
Easy listening, you know?
Yeah. Easy reading.
Your dad's favorite newsletter. Yeah.
I dig it. Okay. A venture stat you think about constantly.
That 70 to 75% of employees don't exercise their equity. For a lot of good reasons and a lot of bad reasons, but I think one of the things that I see early stage founders do, which I totally understand, but I have to say is really bad, is over-promising what equity means. Like, stop talking about your seed level equity in dollar values.
I remember being really young and a founder showed me a Excel sheet that basically told me what my stock would be worth at $1.5 billion valuation. Okay. And I looked at that thing and I was what, early 20s, and I was like, I'm in.
You're like kicking your feet.
Yeah. I was like, I'm in. Stop talking. You know?
You threw that into Drew Bot. You were like, Drew Bot, do we believe this? Yeah.
It's predatory, though. Like, it's predatory.
It's ridiculous. Especially when it's stated in an offer as though the offer contains equity and salary, and both of those are cash.
Yeah.
It is. You are not offering this person $100,000 in salary and $10,000 worth of stock. You're offering him $100,000 worth of salary and the potential for that stock at some point in the future to be worth way more than $10,000, but probably not, which is not a great pitch. You got to be honest about it.
Yeah.
Amazing. All right, last question for you. What startup trend you're bullish on that others might not see yet?
Candidly, I'm bullish on the people that are still willing to hire really, really high-level generalists. I think especially in this city, there's been this wave of eliminate as many headcounts as possible. And I think that there's a counterpoint to that, which is enable your best people with a ton of AI. And they will do things that you cannot create for yourself because you're still directing it. So I think that there's been a slight over-rotation to we don't need any employees kind of vibe, whereas it should be, we have a high bar, but the people who clear it, we're just going to like let them run wild.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a LinkedIn post that your system typically won't allow.
Yeah.
But I'm going to steal and use for my non-system.
That's all yours.
My non-system. My
that's
system.
Going into the training set. Sorry, Nicole. Yeah, exactly.
I know. My system, I woke up today.
What is it that Drewba likes I know. To talk about?
All right, Drewba, how was your night? Yeah.
Drewba's like a cool name.
I know.
You should name your kids Drewba. Yeah.
This is Drewba. All right. Well, that does us for this episode of FinTech Mavericks. Peter, thank you so much for joining us and sharing all your sharp insights, transparency. You're funny.
This was awesome.
You have all the qualities we described earlier of someone who should be big on social.
Wow.
And content.
They say don't meet your heroes.
So.
And they're right. Yeah.
I know. This might have been the most we love ourselves show we've done so far. And I'm
going to lead it up to the two of you to talk that
out. And I really appreciate that about all of us.
This was awesome, guys. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
For being here. Cheers.